Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast on a Friday. Today on the podcast, we're going to, of course, talk about USC's opener on Saturday against Arkansas State. We're going to talk with USCFootball.com beat writer Dan Weber. There's a lot of questions for Dan this week, and I do apologize for having this show a little bit later on the week. I've been down for the count health-wise, so I'm trying to get back and rally it up for the weekend here. But if you have any questions or comments for us, we do love to hear from you. Podcast at USCFootball.com is our email address, or a couple ways to leave us a voicemail. 641-715-3900, extension 816-646. And I think I had that actually wrong up on our website, peristylepodcast.com. So check that number, 641-715-3900, 816-646 is the extension. And of course, I mentioned the website, peristylepodcast.com. You can leave a voicemail on the left side of the page. And iTunes, you guys are starting to leave us more feedback on iTunes. Give us that 5-star rating. That'd be great. Go to iTunes.com/peristylepodcast. Please subscribe to our channel. Please leave us 5-star ratings. That would be wonderful, and people have been doing that, so thanks very much. And want to bring in Dan Weber. What's up, Dan? How you doing?
Doing good. Doing good. Friday's a good day to do this, I think, just the team walkthrough today. Basically, they finished up yesterday, and it didn't look like they went, you know, all that hard yesterday. Yesterday was the review, typical Thursday, no pads. So we're kind of, now just sitting around waiting for Saturday night, where USC is the 12th and final Pac-12 team to get into action this year by going at 8 o'clock on Saturday night, 11 o'clock Eastern time. Everybody else will have already played by the time USC is on the field tomorrow night.
Yeah, interesting. So the last one to go, and it was an interesting opening day. The big one, of course, Utah and Michigan. I think that's super important. Colorado losing on the road to Hawaii wasn't a very positive development. And then Arizona, of course, not looking that great when Scooby Wright went down. But it's USC will be the last one to play of all those teams. And, of course, the real important ones, Arizona State and Texas A&M. But, of course, for USC fans, Arkansas State's where it all starts.
Yeah, it does. And I do think it's one of those games that I think it's a really good opener. I mean, this is a team that, they played at Tennessee last year in front of 100,000. They probably aren't going to be playing as many SEC teams because they may be too good to be playing SEC teams on a regular basis at this point when, SEC teams can find, East Tennessee State just started football. So, they'll jump on the SEC schedules. But, I mean, I think when you look at Arkansas State, they've had 4 straight winning seasons, 4 straight bowl seasons. They've got 9 starters back from an offense that broke basically every record, in the school history. A very good, dual threat quarterback in Freddie Knight. And then, this is a team that, Gus Malzahn coached there, Hugh Freeze, now the Ole Miss coach there. I mean, the Boise State coach, now at Boise State, coached there for a year. So they're not unfamiliar with pretty good football at Arkansas State. I mean, even though nobody knows where the heck Jonesboro, Arkansas is, this is not the difference between this team and say Idaho next week is a pretty big difference. These guys have athletes who can play.
Yeah, and we're going to talk to Jeff Reed from State Nation. He's part of the Scout Network covering the Red Wolves. So we're going to have a show on that. I'm probably going to put that one up Saturday morning or maybe Friday, maybe tonight, Friday night. But we'll have another preview of that. So we'll get to get a kind of perspective of what's going on the Arkansas State side. It's a talented team. It's definitely a team that could, if USC doesn't play well, especially it's an opener, could give USC fits. So we'll have to see what happens Saturday night. We don't know what's going on with DirecTV and Pac-12 Network yet, so people keep asking. We don't know We'll find out. We'll find out soon enough. But Dan, we have a ton of questions about the team.
Throw in a note on that DirecTV.
Sure.
The reason we don't know is what you hear from the people at the Pac-12 is because there are some, you know, negotiating, you know, issues if it's going to happen and all that. They say they're purposely being kept in the dark by the Pac or by the DirecTV people. That the DirecTV people don't really want to give away what they're thinking or what they may be doing. And so people say, how could you not know? How could the Pac-12? Apparently, you know, that maybe is how they negotiate in, you know, in television for a deal like that. So anyway, it's not because we're not trying to find out, but if the people at the Pac-12 don't know, we're probably not going to know.
Exactly. All right. Well, let's jump into a lot of these questions, Dan. We just wanted to kind of wrap these things up. Kind of the end of fall camp, I guess you could say. What's going on? People asking about what the team is. You'll get to see the team on Saturday night. Well, if you don't get the Pac-12 network, you don't go to the Coliseum, but hopefully you'll get to see a lot of this team. But let's jump right in these questions. I'm going to start with a voicemail one, Dan. Here you go.
Randall in Dallas, and my question is for Dan. The punter that receives his blue shirt scholarship, is he going to be redshirting this coming up season since our punter's already a senior? Also, any updates on Ronald Jones? Has he been practicing? Thank you for everything you guys do, and I'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, Arlette, I didn't get the first question. Was that about our Australian punter?
Yeah, exactly, about the punter.
Yeah, probably will be redshirted. He's got 4 years to do, you know, he's got 3 years of eligibility and 4 years after a year at San Francisco City College. Technically, I asked that question of Sark, and Sark, the answer was technically he could play this year. I think that probably won't happen. Actually, I think Chris Alvarado is going to do a lot of, you know, or is going to pick up on the rugby style punting. He actually is a pretty good rugby-style punter. They just haven't used it all that much, although they did use it a half dozen times last year. A couple of them got called back. But I do think it's a signal that they're going to that as a philosophy, and I do like the idea that you get that guy taking, you know, three or four steps before he kicks it. At the same time he's taking those three or four steps, the coverage team is also getting three or four more steps down the field. And if you can accurately kick it to the spot where they're going, it's hard to return those things. If you can get that real good bounce and roll, it's even, you know, if you watch that kid from Utah who, you know, kicks them out of the end zone, you know, 70 yards away. Let's see, as far as Ronald Jones, I thought he had a couple of really good practices, a couple of really good runs. He just looks like, he's one of the guys, you know, writing my column about, you know, looking forward to tomorrow is really looking forward to the freshman. And Ronald Jones is one of the guys. You just want to see him get a chance to, you know, show you what he can do. And I think, you know, freshman running back probably has the least difficulty in terms of transitioning. You either can run, you can see the openings, you can do, or you can't. And I think Ronald's one of the guys who can. So, you know, look for him tomorrow night.
Tarek had a question and a comment. He said, from what you've seen at practice, will USC consistently run the no-huddle, hurry-up offense? And then he said, Sark's really not giving up play calling. Rather, he's changing how he calls plays. He's moving to the Gus Malzahn model, where he calls the plays when it deems it important, but gives Clay Helton a more meaningful job as offensive coordinator. Am I on the right track?
You might be overthinking it a little bit, Tarek. I think the ideal situation would be, this is our game plan. Clay, you implement it. I'll kind of take a look at it. I'll kind of listen in. But I don't think I need to be, if I'm Sark, I don't think I need to be actually calling plays, because maybe, you know, while we've got the ball and we're moving it or whatever, I might want to be, you know, talking to, you know, Justin Wilcox about what we're going to do on defense the next series. I wonder, what are you patting some guy, you know, somebody on the back or talking to a freshman or whatever. So I think as much as Sark loves play calling, I think he actually has turned the reins over. I really do. And I don't think he needs to, you know, babysit the play caller. I mean, it's not like, you know, this is Clay Helton's first rodeo. I mean, he's got a lot of play calling. And, he's the play caller every day in practice. So I think it's a real turnover, a real handover. Now, every head coach, on fourth and two in the red zone or something, they all are going to, be involved in that. Whether he'll actually make that call or not, that'd be interesting. I don't think we know the answer to that. I don't know. Maybe Sark doesn't know. But I think there are ways in which you probably want to encourage your guy who is your play caller to really be the play caller. I don't know that it helps you very much if you're trying to, put your, judgment over, the guy who's going to do it most of the time. So I think he's turned it over.
And then about the, will they consistently run no huddle?
Oh, I think they will. I think last year, there was some overthinking maybe in terms of, how do you do it against Stanford, or what do you do, if you're going to, you're not very deep and, you're going to wear yourself out and all that. I think those have all gone by the wayside in terms of the numbers. I mean, I think they're going to try to figure out how can we get enough guys into these games and how can we get them in early. And the one way you can do it is by speeding up the game. The flip side of the negative, part of them going no huddle last year was you gave the other team more plays, more time to run more plays. And then that, put your defense, on the defense in terms of having enough bodies. I don't think they think that at all this year. I think they're thinking, how can we get enough plays to get all these guys in the game, on both sides of the ball? So I'd be surprised if they put the brakes on this year. I mean, there are situations in the second half of games when you've got a lead and you're able to run the ball on somebody or whatever, that you may, decide, okay, now we don't need to do this. And you really need to have control of that and understand when and where. But I don't think it's not going to be like last year when they, all of a sudden, okay, we're not up tempo anymore.
Mike at Irvine had a question, Dan. What's Cameron Smith shown that puts him ahead of Michael Hutchings at middle linebacker? Is it mostly his size that gives him the edge?
I think he's got a couple of things. I think the first thing he surprised us with in the spring was how good a cover guy he was. I mean, he doesn't look, and that wasn't necessarily his reputation of being able to, play the ball and, get really good depth and still keep, leverage on a receiver and then basically, in a crowd come out with a football. He was a revelation, I think, in the spring. He moved because, he had a reputation as sort of a big bruiser, banger, brawler. He's a very much a finesse guy as well. He moves, easily and smoothly, and he probably never looked like a freshman, and he doesn't, in person either. I've got a lot of freshmen that don't look like freshmen, but he didn't play like a freshman. He just he looked comfortable out there. He didn't ever look like anything was too much for him, and he's been and Michael Hutchings had a really good fall. And, is, a mentor to a lot of these kids. And, but Cameron, when you're the difference is, it's almost 6'3", 245 and moves as well as he does. He's, this is a kind of a freak group of freshman linebackers. They're bigger, they're stronger, they're quicker, than people, that have been here. And, it makes a difference.
USC tweeted out this morning, Dan, that if Cameron Smith starts, he'll be the first USC true freshman to start the opener at inside linebacker since Ricky Gray, that's actually Ricky Ellison, back in 1978 versus Texas Tech. And I kind of tweeted on it. It's like, so many talented true freshman defenders, and he just wouldn't have been your first pick as the guy that comes in and makes the biggest difference. But he was here in the spring, and I think that helped a lot. Injury to Lamar Dawson kind of opens up a spot and boom, there, it looks like Smith is going to be able to get a start.
And I guess there are some similarities with, Ricky Gray ended up as a linebacker with the 49ers and Northern California guy and sent his son, Red Ellison, down, kind of a bruising, guy who could have probably played linebacker if he wanted to. But that would be neat if he's the first one. I think that's going to happen. I'd be, they didn't release him is basically the first freshman we got to talk to all year, for no reason.
Yeah.
The other day. I mean, there's a reason, you know, Cameron Smith was the one that was designated to come over and talk to us.
Yeah. And we actually have a one-on-one video interview with him up there on the site now. If people want to check it out on uscfootball.com. Keeley got to talk to Cameron Smith, so it's cool. It's up there, and you can kind of get a sense for what he's like. Zane from Houston had a question, and he was also concerned about Steve Sarkisian calling the plays like in the red zone or like critical third, fourth down situations. But he wanted to know, and you know, we kind of already talked about that, but he wanted to know, could you diagnose some of the red zone and third and fourth down problems from last year? Thank you and fight on.
Well, actually, yes, he... one of the better red zone teams in the country. I think it was 75%, you know, conversion ability. So they, you know, they still had the difficulty of being able to power run, you know, and we all remember the third and two, fourth and two at Utah that cost them the game where they had to go, they kind of, you know, went for two trick plays, which was just, you know, it's mind-boggling, to be honest. You know, less than 3 minutes to go, all you need is one first down. You've got the ball, and they're 27. You've got the lead. Game's over. If you get a first down, you run a couple of trick plays. So that would have been one issue, that, you know, the idea that we're going to come out of the huddle real fast, run the hurry-up play, get the quarterback under the center where we already know that Max has an issue with snapping the ball to a quarterback who's under the center just because he's got, you know, he's 6'6 and long. His arms are longer than that. I mean, it just, you know, there is an issue with the ball being in the same place at the same time. If you try to do that while you're doing it in a hurry and you haven't done it before in the game, that's just a recipe for, you know, screwing it up, which they did. The other issue was, say the Arizona State game, and they get the onside kick with the lead, and they're in Arizona State territory, and they go three and out because they're afraid to throw it, and they couldn't run it for three straight plays. You know, they'd scored 32 points or whatever it was already, and yet when they needed to be able to run the ball and really punch it in there, they weren't able to do that. Other than that, their red zone, you know, offense has been, you know, been pretty good. Just the, and I do think, and I think Sark said this, the ability to run power when you need it is going to change with, Trey Madden. You know, Buck Allen, I think he was 215 and he had power, but Buck needed, I think, space. He needed a crease. He needed a chance to get ahead of steam. He was a kind of a downhill runner once he got into space. He was more of a converted wide receiver. I mean, he had been a great receiver in high school, and so he was more of a guy playing in space, where I think Trey is more a guy, you know, he was a linebacker and a quarterback. I think he's more comfortable, you know, playing in the backfield and, you know, finding that seam or making that seam happen. So I think they've got one advantage this year in terms of the short yardage, you know, power running situation with Trey Madden.
All right. This is, we'll go to Nick. Nick from Cypress. We got to see him Tuesday at our, we had a little anniversary party for members of the site for uscfootball.com. Nick from Cypress, aka Big Nick 21 USC. He says, first I want to say I love what you and Ryan do with the podcast. So thank you. Well, thank you, Nick. And the question is, what is your honest opinion of fall camp? And then what is your realistic expectation record-wise for the team?
I think the fall camp was, you know, where they picked up, there was continuity, I think, from spring to summer to fall. So they didn't, you know, you didn't see them, you know, going backwards. You didn't see them slowing down. They installed everything. You know, basically a lot of that was, you know, review. But they've gotten in a lot of reps. They've gotten to do a lot of things we didn't get to see last year. Tremendously more work on special teams. You know, all kinds of the coverage situations, all kinds of kickoff situations, and things that we really didn't get, you know, get to see all that much. A lot more just emphasis on the details. And I think that'll pay off. How it works with the, you know, the field goal game is anybody's guess at this point. We're just not as absolutely certain, although Alex Wood, you know, won that job, and, you know, congratulations to him, and then won a scholarship, and that's great. And as far as that goes now, you've got all three people involved in the, you know, the field goal part of the game, the snapper, the holder, and, you know, Connor Sullivan, Zach Smith, and now Alex Wood all have scholarships, and they were all walk-ons. So that's a pretty neat thing to say about, you know, that three kids who can walk on at USC and become really important members. And so you've seen that. I think one of the things Sark does really well is handle sort of the competitive, that's, I think, something that really has some continuity with the way Pete did it. In terms of, you know, you play, you move into the first group or the second group, depending on how you play. And I don't think they're, you know, saying we got to play this guy because we recruited him from here, and if we don't play him, we won't be able to recruit another guy. You don't see much. You don't get the sense of that. It's based on, you know, performance, you know, on the practice field. And I think that was the absolute secret of Pete's success, was the performance, the competitive performance on the practice field that they took with them into games, believing that nobody they played will have practiced as hard, competed as hard, played against as many good people in practice, you know, in every game. And the confidence level at USC that when the time came, they would be able to make the play because they did it in practice every day was what absolutely separated USC. And I think they've done a good job of that. I've been real, you know, pleased. Now, again, it's sustaining that through the entire season that we'll see, you know, how it works. But I think fall camp, it's been a good fall camp. When you consider the number of freshmen that they've had to integrate into this, basically into the rotations, and there are a lot of them that are in the rotations, and that's not easy to do. I would guess, and I think I'm going to say this in my column, I don't think there could possibly be a top 10 team going this weekend that's going to play as many freshmen as USC will. I mean, I just don't think that's even remotely possible that you'll see a top 10 team playing as many true freshmen. But they're not playing, you know, because they were highly ranked or, you know, recruited and everybody wants to show what they – no, they're playing because they deserve to play, because they deserve to be out there. And so that's, to me, that's going to be the focus, I think, of tomorrow night.
Did you have a prediction for the season? You're not big on those.
I really don't do it. I mean, you know, when I think of how long we have been, and we only get down to the field the last 5 minutes. And when I think of how wrong I'd have been, if you'd have tapped me on the shoulder, you know, with 4 minutes to go, and how many of those games last year, I'd have been wrong. That's with 4 minutes to go. And, you know, now we're,
that's a great
we're
point.
3-4 months down the road, it's like, there's no way. Let's face it, USC has probably more talent than anybody they play. I don't think that's wrong to say that. It's young talent. You know, this is the coach's first top 10 team. You know, we all know that, you know, the issues that you know, are outside, you know, the exact football parameters of this team. But, you know, there are human issues and, you know, real day-to-day stuff that's going on. But there's not a game that this team will go into that you would be surprised if they win. There aren't any. I mean, you line them up. If you look at last year and what could have been with a team, you know, that had, you know, three or four guys that are really going to be missed without any question about it, but with way fewer, people that they could put on the field than this year's team, and, you know, how many, you know, they were within, you know, a play here and a play there of, you know, double-digit, you know, win season and maybe a Pac-12 South championship. And so how would you be surprised if any of the games they did, you know, they won? I mean,
yeah, you just wouldn't.
They've got a chance.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got a chance.
Okay, so there's a lot. Sark is still a polarizing figure, of course. I wanted to get your thoughts. We had Ron write in, and he's kind of happy with Sark giving up the play calling duties. He said, this action and statement gave me more confidence as a fan that Sark is realistic about his self-assessment as a coach and is generally trying to improve rather than letting his ego totally run the show. What's your take on this? And then we have guys like Joe, who says, if USC has a good season, it will be in spite of Steve Sarkisian, not because of him, disappointed. So we have kind of wide ranges, people that are, you know, kind of happy with what's happened with Steve Sarkisian, and other people are just, they're still not buying in.
Yeah, I wouldn't buy in, but I am, you know, I'm watching what's happened in practice and, you know, watching, I mean, the whole play calling situation. I think that was handled really well. I think it will make him a better coach. It will give him a chance to be a head coach. I think he, you know, it was one of those things that he and Lane, it was so much a part of their whole lives in terms of how they saw themselves coming up, you know, with Pete and, you know, competing. And there was obviously competition between the two of them and, Norm Chow. Congratulations to Norm, I guess, for last night. And, I think that was so much their vision of how it was to be a head coach for them. And Clay Helton, you know, mentioned that was hard for Sark to give that up. But I think was that the reason was what happened at, you know, Salute to Troy? Or was that, you know, in the works in a way that it was absolutely, absolutely going to happen? You know, I think that, you know, the Salute to Troy thing probably pushed it over, that it made it really make a lot of sense to do it. And I think in this, you know, the time since that's happened, we've seen Sark, I think it frees him to be, and I think he's almost realizing it, like, you know, I can talk to Justin, you know, I can, you know, grab a guy and say, way to go, nice play, you know, or, you know, whatever he has to do. And, you know, just the point of, I can talk to the officials, which obviously he couldn't do last year when he had, you know, to bring Pat Aiden down in the Stanford game. So there are so many, I think, pluses to him not being the play caller that I think, however that happened, that's a good thing. And I think it gives them a chance to maybe be in a place that maybe they wouldn't have been if that didn't happen. For those who are unhappy about what happened, they ought to be. That was a big letdown for the people who, you know, who hired Sark and, you know, went out on a limb, to be honest. You know, Sark, they hired him. It was a personal hire. It wasn't a hire based on, okay, you've got one of the three or four top college football coaching jobs in America. Let's go out and get one of the top three or four, you know, college football coaches. It was a kind of a personal statement that we think this guy fits in and we trust him and all that. And so, you know, you lose some of that, and there's no question that has to be, you know, gained back. And, you know, there are, you know, you don't like it, for example, Cody Kessler and Sua Craven should not have to come to practice when their teammates are warming up and they've got to, you know, explain that they're still behind their coach and, you know, all of that. That shouldn't have to happen. It might work out for the better. This might be the way that they all coalesce and the assistant coaches step up in a more dramatic way to take over, and everybody kind of rallies around the flag. I don't know that it's going to be easy, but I think they've got a chance. But, you know, so much of that is Sark. This is a challenge. You know, I mean, just the fact that this is your first ever team going into the season that's top 10, and you're at USC, and people are expecting what they're expecting. And so I can see both sides of that, you know, reaction to Sark.
All right. We got a few more. Dan, is your dog take a little nap there?
No. You know what? I'm hearing that, but that's not here. I wish it were. They're being very quiet. My dogs are being very quiet.
That's funny.
I hear that too.
I hear a little snoring going on. That's kind of funny. I don't know what that is. That's okay. So apologize for that. We don't know what it is.
No, we don't. I'm looking and that was my first thought actually, but, they're very quiet today.
That's funny. We used to have Coach Harvey Hyde's dog would always kind of bark in the background. It was funny when we did these. Yeah. All right. Well, we have a few more. James in Kansas City. He said, I would be interested in getting your group's take on the dynamic that exists between the players and the coaching staff, and particularly the position coaches. That seems to be one of the areas that, with a few exceptions, hasn't been as good in recent years, and which might be part of why the team hasn't seemed to be able to be consistently tough and focused on a week-to-week basis. How does the team look this year, and how do the players seem to interact with and respond to their respective position coaches? Do you see anything that you would believe provides some insight into the direction that the program is headed in this now indisputably pivotal season? Thanks, James in Kansas City.
Yeah, I think, James, that's always, you know, that is a really key point. And I think one of the difficulties last year was that the year before, that coaching staff, especially after the firing of Lane, rallied around in remarkable ways. I mean, that was one of the greatest group coaching, I guess you would say, performances that I've ever seen. And those were some really, I mean, say what you will about Lane, he was able to get guys that, I mean, and it was kind of funny, you would interview these guys after they'd been hired, and they, you know, they loved Lane. And then they started coaching with him, and they would go, and yet, once Lane was gone, man, that was a great coaching staff. I mean, it was, so I think there was a big challenge. I mean, it really related well to the players, and they, you know, just picked up, and instead of looking for their next job and all that, that group of guys just did as good a job as you could ever possibly hope for in that situation. It was just remarkable. So that was a big challenge last year, you know, to bring in six guys from Washington and, you know, to have people say, you know, I don't know if there is, you know, that group we had the year before was really good. So I think they were, you know, kind of up against it a little bit. I think the way this has all evolved, it's moving in the right direction, I think. There were some rough spots last year in terms of everybody working together and everybody being on the same page. And that happened so quickly the year before, because those weren't all brand new, you know, all guys that had been together, but they just seemed to, you know, pick up one another where they needed it and all that. I think I'm seeing more of that this year, and I'm probably being optimistic, which is what you almost have to do at this time of year. But I think you're seeing, you know, they're being more forceful. I think the position groups, you know, seem to be, you know, working well together. I mean, I think they've made little adjustments, like the rush ends now, instead of, you know, half the time with the defensive line, half the time with the linebackers, are spending all their time with the linebackers. So they get to, you know, relate just to, you know, Peter Sermon instead of, you know, going back and forth. And you're seeing more, you know, Johnny Nansen being much more able to be much more forceful as a special teams coach, because they're spending so much more time on special teams. It's just all of the things that, you know, didn't maybe happen as quickly as everybody would have hoped for, which is probably unrealistic last year. I think that's happening more this year. They're moving in the right direction, and you know, the proof will be you know, once we start playing games. But I think it's working better this year than we maybe saw it last year.
We'll knock out these last few. It says, hey, Ryan, this is Dennis from Lancaster. My question is for Dan. What players on offense or defense need to have a big game on Saturday to keep their starting job? Looking at the depth. I hope you're okay, Dan. Bless you. Looking at the depth chart, there's plenty of position battles that might change by the next game. Keep up the great work and fight on.
I don't know if I look at it in the classic starter role, because I don't think they're looking at it as much in that, you know, starter role. Let's see. I mean, when you look at, for example, the three tight ends, I mean, they're all going to play, and they're interchangeable, and I don't know if you're ever going to have where you say, okay, this guy is absolutely the starter. I mean, it may happen, but I'm not sure I see that. I don't see that in the running backs, I don't think. People who need, you know, a big game. It just doesn't seem to me to be the kind of situation where there's going to be such a big demarcation in terms of playing time. I mean, I think it's going to go game to game. I think one of the theories of how they're going to do it, for example, on defense, is the you play a whole lot of guys early and you keep them all fresh, but you also see who's really playing well. And those are the guys you finish the game with. And I think that may be the way you're going to see this, you know, play out, where everybody gets a chance to go in the first half and they just, you know, keep shuffling, you know, personnel wise. And then, you know, you just won't play as much if you're not having a good game and the other guy will. But I think that might be the kind of thing that's going to go week to week to week, where they, and the good thing about that is that keeps the competition really going. You know, every week, where it's not, or it keeps it going in the game itself, you know, where you just stay on, you better stay on top of your, you know, of what you're doing. And, but when I look at the, you know, and look at positions, it just doesn't jump out at you that, okay, this is the guy who's on the bubble. You know, you could say Scott Felix, because you got Jabari Ruffin and Porter Gustin. Again, they're all going to play. So, you know, at that rush end. So who's listed first? Maybe that could change, you know, at some of these positions, but I don't see it as the classic big difference between you're a starter and you're not a starter. You don't have that sense with this team. I mean, I think I went through the roster last week and I came up with 60 guys that you could pencil in on a week as the first guy at his position on a particular line. And you wouldn't think anything of it. Now, you wouldn't do that with a whole bunch of those guys that are, you know, maybe down a level or two on the depth chart. But there are a lot of guys who wouldn't be totally uncomfortable, you know, on that first line.
I agree with you 100%, Dan. It'll be funny to see. It'll be interesting to see all the different guys that play, because I think you're going to see a lot of people come in there. Bearsecutor had a question. Dan, would you agree that the UCLA game this year shapes up as the most important for USC football since 1967? Wow, that's going back. The stakes are so high. I wasn't even born then, so I'm not sure I can answer that. But it's not just the likelihood that it will decide the Pac-12 South. Losing to UCLA 4 years straight with a freshman quarterback won't just be disappointing. It could well be a turning point. Consider if UCLA does turn out to be a top-notch team when we lose to them, the impact of yet another quote-unquote upset is obvious, and if they do turn out to be Pac-12 champions, that hurts us in recruiting. In either case, can you imagine a scenario where Sark remains as USC head coach if he can't consistently out-recruit Jim Mora, i.e. we face them every year without a talent advantage? I can't recall any USC coach since 1960 who in that position, not even when UCLA was going to the Rose Bowl. Bear secure. So he's worried.
Yeah,
USC did have the number one recruiting class in the country last year and had a better class.
I mean, I don't think it's the issue is out-recruiting UCLA. I mean, UCLA didn't beat USC the last 3 years because they out-recruited them. That's not probably ever going to be, even those, you know, the dark years, USC wasn't getting out-recruited and was coming in with some really good players. They just ended up with, you know, really bad game plans, really bad execution. I mean, you had 3 straight years, 3 different coaches, and the product was about the same for all kinds of different reasons. But, yeah, I mean, I think it's really, really, really important game. You don't want to make it too important. I mean, there have been games where, you know, you got to you outthink yourself and you come up with, oh, let's do something really special or let's change the way we're playing. Yeah, defense. Oh, there, that's a good idea. You know, at the end of the year, and you're going to change everything. So hopefully that doesn't happen. Hopefully you walk out there and just say, look, we're better than these guys, and we're going to play harder, and that's the way the game goes. And my take on this year with the UCLA game is I would not make it too big a deal. I'd just make it another USC-UCLA game, and this, you know, time we're going to play well. And that's all. I mean, I do not want to, I don't think you want to make it the end of the, you know, the most important game. What is, would that be in 48 years? I don't know. That to me, the Texas game was pretty important. there were a lot of important games, because it's, you know, head to head in town. I mean, the thing that's driving them crazy, I think, at UCLA is they won those three straight games, and it doesn't seem to matter. I think Michael Lev made a really good point. They've done everything they can over there, good and bad, and they can't get any publicity. Nobody pays any attention to them. I mean, you know, they have this, you know, this absolute, you know, superstar rapper, you know, come in and try to, you know, and it's like nothing, you know. I mean, they have, you know, they have good stuff, they have bad stuff, and it's like, hey, pay attention to us over here. Hey, we're over here. And, you know, it can't be fun for them to, you know, see USC ranked in the top 10 going into this season. And so I think maybe we overthink a little bit the whole UCLA-USC, you know, relationship. And I just think, you know, you're better than them, and you're going to make it happen. And you don't try to change up. You don't try to, you know, act like it's the biggest thing going. And just, you know, just play the game. I mean, I don't think Pete made it a big deal. You just play the game and, hey, we're better than they are, but we have to play our game, and we have to play exactly the way we play, and we have to, you know, compete like crazy. And, that hasn't happened for three straight years, and you see what happens. But, I just go back to, you know, just play your game. Don't make it too big a deal, and just assume you've prepared better, you've practiced better all year, you've got better players, you're going to win.
We got two more quick ones, and I don't even know if you need to answer this one, Dan, but Tana wants to know, will any of the three freshman running backs redshirt?
I don't think so.
No.
I really don't think so. I think they're all, I think we'll know the answer to that tomorrow, because as Sartre said, they're all going to play.
They're going to play.
So I think you'll have your answer tomorrow.
Yeah, and then another freshman question from Irvin. Is there a chance you might see Porter Gustin, Osa Messina, Cameron Smith all on the field at the same time?
I think so, yeah. I think they might do that just for the fun of it. But I think the rotations are going to be such that it could just happen. You know, I mean, they've got different ways of substituting for different position groups and all of that. So, I mean, I think it might have been more likely if Cameron wasn't the starter, but we'll see how that. But yeah, I think that's an absolute possibility, and that ought to be scary to some people when you see, you know, that freshman group all in there together and think, hey, those guys are freshmen.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, Dan, great stuff. We got our sorry again. It was a later. In the week podcast, that's okay. We do it Friday before the game. It's not too bad. But thanks for getting all the questions. I know we had a ton of them this week.
Yeah, that's great. And I don't blame them. This is the time to have those questions. And we'll start getting some answers tomorrow night. And I think that's what's the fun about this is, I mean, we've seen, you know, almost all the practices or almost every play and every practice. And yet, you know, what I'm writing, you know, for tomorrow is for today, looking at tomorrow, is I can't wait to see them play with the lights on. That's what I want to see,
yeah.
And that's what matters. And, you know, as much as practice transfers to the games, nothing is quite like that, you know, when they hit the field and they're actually, you know, the lights are on and they're ready to go. And I think it'll be a pretty good show. I mean, I think this is a team that's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah. That's all we can hope for, Dan. All right. Well, thanks so much for coming on. And I wanted to, I forgot to mention Michael Moline Real Estate at the top of the show. So we'll give you a little message from them coming up here in a second. But thanks to Dan Weber and thanks to everyone. You've been listening to the Peristyle podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we will talk to you next time.
Most people know that buying or selling real estate is no small undertaking. Understanding the market value of your home, pricing, advertising, closing, and perhaps even selling personal property along the way are all examples of the real estate journey. And Michael Moline Real Estate has the experience to help make that journey an enjoyable one. Southern California real estate inventories are at historic lows, so there is no better time than now to sell your residential property. Whether you're moving into a bigger home or downsizing, personal property is often a component of the real estate transaction. Michael Moline Real Estate has industry expertise to help you with both your real property and your personal property as you get ready to transition. Michael Moline Real Estate specializes in properties located on the west side of Los Angeles and the southern San Fernando Valley communities. Allow Michael Moline Real Estate to give you a free comparative market analysis and home valuation so you know how much your home is worth today. Contact Michael Moline at michaelmolinerealestate.com. That's Michael, M-O-L-I-N-E, realestate.com.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. Don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on PeristylePodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.